Hey there, welcome to the No Normal Show for Thursday, November 5th, 2020, brought to you by Revive Health. This is our weekly deep dive into how hospital and health system marketers can navigate what we call the No Normal. I'm Chris Bevelo, Health Systems Practice Lead at Revive Health and your host for the show. I'm joined as always by Chase Kleckner, who is Senior Marketing Manager at Revive Health and our show's producer. Hello, Chase.
Hey, Chris. Good to see you as always.
You too. We are also so happy to have back with us once again, Ryan Coliani, who is Revive Health's Issues and Crisis Leader. With a decade of agency experience, he is responsible for ensuring that clients are prepared for the unexpected and help protect their reputations. As a poised crisis counselor and talented media trainer, Ryan has built impactful public affairs campaigns and has elevated the profile of university presidents and Fortune 100 executives. Ryan, hello.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
Yeah, thanks for joining. It's just, you know, one of those days is kind of slow. We don't have a lot going on in the world. So hopefully we can find something to talk about. We'll figure it out, I'm sure. We'll get to that in a little bit. Just some quick notes before we dive in. If you're new to this show, we share industry trends, research, stories. We hear from people inside the industry, outside the industry, anything to help health system marketers navigate what we call the no normal. As I mentioned, if you want to know more about that concept, what we mean by the no normal, check out the content that Chase will be sharing in the chat function. I do believe that there's probably no better label to describe Thursday, November 5th, 2020 than no normal, but just we'll get into that. For those of you who are live with us, here's how we use the Zoom features. So if you want to talk to the other people that are attending, please use the chat function. And again, Chase will be using that to post links to things we're talking about. If you have a question that you would like us to address in the show, for either Ryan or myself or Chase, use the Zoom Q&A queue. That's what we watch to make sure we're able to answer questions. We do that as we go. There'll be plenty of time at the end as well. And we love questions. It makes it more interactive. So please throw them our way. And remember, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. Every day we broadcast the show. We also post a recording of it by the end of the day. So if you want to share that out with people, you can find a link to that at our website at thinkrevivehealth.com/COVID-19, where you can find all of the recordings of our episodes that we've done, as well as hordes of other content related to COVID-19, including our most recent survey report that we'll be diving into today on vaccines. So please check that out and look at the other content we have to help you through what we're going to be talking about. So you ready to dive in? I keep refreshing my browser. I don't know why, but I know that stuff is happening right now in the world in terms of the election, and it would be weird to not at least acknowledge that that's the case. I think we're seeing results coming in. I'm going to assume everybody's up to date on where we're at with this thing, at least the ambiguity we have, but results coming in from Nevada today as we speak, Georgia, Arizona at some point, though not this minute. One of the things I saw that was curious is Nevada seems to be really trending toward Biden. And I think as people probably have figured out, if Biden wins Nevada and Arizona, that gives him 270. Of course, there's a lot to be figured out after that. There's lawsuits, there's recounts. But in terms of the initial vote count, but not everybody has called Arizona. In fact, I think only one network has called Arizona, Fox News. And if they call Nevada for Biden, that would force them to call the election. So how's that going to go if nobody else has called Arizona yet? That would be kind of shocking. So I don't see anything new on my browser. Anything you want to add here, Ryan, about where we're at? And we certainly don't need to spend a lot of time on it, but there's a nice transition from all this to what we're talking to in a second. But anything on the election and where we're at right now?
No, I think it'll just be interesting to see not only how the White House goes, but also where Congress is coming out of this, looking more likely like a divided Congress, which obviously makes things more challenging for things like CARES Act 2.0 that have tremendous impact on health systems. or even if ACA gets struck down by the Supreme Court next month, any sort of legislative solution, should that happen, would be increasingly less likely. So much to watch in addition to the race for the White House.
Yeah, yeah, a lot to watch. So much to watch. But we're going to, the thing that's interesting is, I don't know that this has happened before. I think it's happened kind of, but the election has definitely put the focus on COVID-19 a bit on the back burner, understandably. Like, everybody's focused on the election. But, you know, we have heard from one of the candidates that, hey, we've rounded the corner on this. In fact, the White House actually put out a statement or a report at some point in the last few weeks saying one of the accomplishments of the current administration is, I don't know, what was the verb they used? It wasn't conquer, defeat. They've defeated COVID-19. And then also the president has said on the campaign trail, just wait and watch. As soon as the election happens, nobody will be talking about COVID-19 anymore. Unfortunately, here we are. Yesterday, blew past the 100,000 mark in terms of cases, up to 107,000 based on what the New York Times and others have reported. We are seeing and hearing really alarming reports in terms of the health system capabilities. We know here in Minnesota, Mayo Clinic has turned off elective surgeries around some of their Wisconsin locations because Wisconsin is just a mess. Minnesota is a mess. Report yesterday in Minnesota, and this is just because this is what I know because it's close to me, that we have 9 ICU beds open across the entire metro, that they are deferring transfers from outstate or even Wisconsin locations. So there's a possibility that elective surgeries might be on the table. We've heard that in other places. So basically, not only have we not turned the corner, we are in worse shape than maybe we've ever been. Not in deaths. That's the only good news, is we've learned a lot about how to treat this. And so the deaths aren't where they have been or are as bad, but a lot of the predictions are there that it's just a matter of time, that the death toll on a daily basis trails the case toll. And I think yesterday, you know, it was not a good, it was 1600. Oh my gosh, I hadn't even seen that. That's a high number. Like, we've been floating around 1,000 and we got to 1600 yesterday. So boy, we could use a vaccine. Let's just put it that way. So that's what we're here to talk about today. And what we're going to use to talk about that, what we want to talk about is, how do hospitals and health systems grapple with a vaccine when it comes out and the ramifications of that. And we're going to have that conversation with Ryan using our most recent survey that we've done that's focused on vaccines. So maybe, Ryan, you want to start by just giving people a high level overview of what that study was, and then we'll dive into some specifics. I know we're going to share some things too, but why don't you start with that?
Yeah, we're going to go into a couple of key findings and kind of ultimately what this means for health systems. First off, this instrument was fielded in late October, had about 800 people fielded across the U.S., margin of error of 4% or so. So it gave us a really good idea of kind of where the public perception is on vaccine, when they expect it to arrive. You'll see in a second kind of some different audiences that we've kind of broken out to and some personas that we think health systems should be aware of as they navigate this. And it also talks about like who should get it first and those types of things. So yes, Chris, definitely want to see a vaccine in the near future, but there are some challenges that will present themselves for health systems, particularly kind of that initial wave of vaccinations that go through and how we get folks comfortable with getting it. How do we validate the FDA, those types of things. So why don't we go through a couple of quick slides to kind of show you some findings and kind of where we see some opportunities here. So this slide, probably not overly surprising. We asked consumers kind of who do they trust to determine when a vaccine is safe. Unsurprising, doctors are up there number one. Hospital systems shortly behind it. Also have federal health officials, CDC, FDA probably fit in that bucket. Followed pretty distantly by local health officials, pharmaceutical companies that actually develop the vaccine. So you can kind of see a perception here that the public feels that they may be biased on promoting their product. Health insurance, friends and family, religious leaders, and then lastly, the president. And you know, given the fact that we see doctors, local hospitals, federal health officials tops, we see a tremendous opportunity for health systems to kind of build credibility internally. We see that as kind of the primary driver of getting external audiences to adopt the vaccine. And so health systems need to build that credibility with clinicians and frontline staff to kind of get the general public comfortable. But there's probably also going to need to be communications activities and campaigns, frankly, that get clinicians and staff comfortable with receiving it, since they are ultimately going to be one of the first priority groups to receive it, and ultimately the ones that are going to be making recommendations for patients.
Yeah, so much to unpack here. Just a reminder, Chase, you have posted in the chat channel a copy or a link to a copy of the vaccine report. So we're giving you the highlights today. I don't know where we want to dive in with that. I mean, just the difference between kind of an official policy and personal policies of caregivers. I mean, I think we should spend some time there, a little more time.
And yeah, the challenge, I think that's probably a good place
to start. The challenge for that, right?
Yeah, it's a huge challenge. And, you know, what are the policies that health systems are going to implement once they have enough vaccine to get frontline staff vaccinated? Are they going to require everybody to have a vaccine before they go back to work? And are there additional steps that help? I think this is the key point too. What additional steps do health systems need to do to build the credibility internally? You know, are they going to require a deeper dive into FDA data to determine the quality of the vaccine? Are they going to work with their epidemiologists to do that? I think now is the time for health systems to start signaling how they are planning on doing that to kind of manage expectations, given we don't really have a great roadmap for when we can anticipate the vaccine being available. So how they're working with FDA to review data, how they may be partnering with the State Department of Health in their communities, how they may be working with other health systems to maybe come together to validate. So there are a couple of ways that I think health systems need to do that. And as I said, hopefully starting that conversation earlier to help manage expectations, to make clinicians feel like the system is doing the right thing to ensure their safety and to make sure that whatever gets approved is ultimately safe for patients.
Yeah, and it's so important to do that, because we know, I mean, you don't have to kind of guess that this is going to happen. You're going to have individual caregivers that don't agree with wherever you come up. It's just inevitable. Like, we had that with masks. And if we had that with wearing masks, which is a pretty simple act, or hydrochloroquine, if I'm pronouncing that right, vaccines have always been controversial, even if it's a minority group of people, but there are certainly clinicians that are in that group. And now we're, you know, now this is a new vaccine. And so really the idea that you can be completely on top of this, but you might have one or more clinicians being outspoken, one outspoken publicly, but also you got to watch for patient relations. And if a physician is saying, hey, I know what ABC Health System saying here on the website, but I'm telling you this, which it could be the opposite, right? Where that could end up. That could end up in the press. That could end up, you know, on social media. So huge issue.
Yeah, I think it will end up on social and in the media. And I think that reinforces a really key point that we've been recommending to a lot of our clients. This can't just be a broad health system campaign or communication. We need to get clinicians involved to be the spokesperson. CNOs, CMOs, frontline care docs, all those individuals need to be a part of this and being the ones that are out there in media to increase the credibility. And the one interesting thing that you mentioned, Chris, you know, we can certainly have individuals out there that are going to be focused on, you know, lessening the credibility of this or believing that it's not safe and they're going to get a significant airtime. You're also going to have a challenge based on how things are going with Operation Warp Speed that we may have multiple vaccines to consider. And how are health systems prioritizing which one they think is best? That they may ultimately, it may be dictated to them based on, you know, availability and how the federal government decides to distribute. But, you know, what if the side effects for one vaccine are significantly higher than the other? You know, we get to a point where one vaccine requires multiple doses and one doesn't, you know, how are health systems kind of communicating the differences and the path forward for patients as well as the internal staff?
All of which kind of brings, you know, there's just so many dimensions to think about this. You know, there's kind of the black and white of this is what we believe in terms of, you know, our preference on vaccines and what you should do about it. But the dimension of the comfort level of people with that and how that may evolve over time. And so, like, you know, the kind of the societal conversation of who wants to be first. So our survey looked at that as well, right?
It did, yeah. So Chase, if you want to jump up to, I think it might be in the next slide, or might be more on the waiting piece, but both on who gets it first, as well as, sorry, Chase, if you go back one, I jumped the gun. but in addition to kind of who wants it first, or who gets it first, the general public has a pretty good understanding. We don't have it in the slide here, but does have a good understanding of kind of who should be prioritized. And it largely matches what you've seen from the FDA or state health officials of prioritizing frontline care workers, moving towards at-risk populations or the elderly, and then kind of going through when, you know, healthier individuals should receive it. So the expectations are actually pretty well managed there on who should receive it. The interesting part is this slide where ultimately kind of people are kind of willing to wait it out. They kind of want to wait and see how does that first wave maybe go? How effective is the vaccine for those frontline care workers? Are there significant side effects that they want to be aware of? And so kind of much like we've seen with COVID, kind of seeing waves of infection rates and those types of things, there's ultimately going to be waves of when people want to get the vaccine. So I think the surprising part of this is kind of that significant chunk towards the end that are willing to wait essentially a year before getting this, since we probed in October. They're waiting to go September or beyond. Now that's all to say that ultimately this is a moment in time as a poll. And so if we see impacts or positive with the vaccine, or negative once it's available, we could see public perception dramatically shift here. So, you know, if it's effective, I would imagine that people are going to be more likely to jump to the front of the line or want to jump to the front of the line after those frontline care workers receive the vaccine.
Can you explain this chart a little bit? Because I don't think it's 100% intuitive without knowing like what was asked of people. Because if you look at it the wrong way, it's weird to think that, well, if you're talking about it coming out in October, 4% will get it right away and nobody's going to wait. But if it's not coming out till September 2021, everybody's going to wait. I don't think that's what this says, but it could be interpreted that way. Can you just give a quick description of what this is, since we don't have the context around it, the text?
Yep. No, it's a good flag. I think the question that was specifically asked here was, you know, if a vaccine was available today, when would you get it? And so since we were polling in October, that was the first option. People wanted to wait a couple months, and then people ultimately were willing to wait, you know, even that significant part of time, almost a year.
Okay.
So I think it wasn't less on when we did ask the same question, when do you expect it'll be ready? And again, most people are in line with where we think things are from a vaccine perspective, where it's not going to be anytime soon, or at least available to them anytime soon. I think most people thought it'd be the first quarter or beginning of the second quarter next year.
So the other part of this is, again, like I just keep hearing this in my brain because this came out of a focus group that we did before the survey, where we asked some clinicians about this. So, you know, it's not just consumers, it's clinicians who have these feelings. And what I recall was, you know, asking some frontline workers, who should get this first? And the answer was healthcare professionals, frontline workers, right? So these were like ED nurses and people were asking. And then the question was posed to them personally, do you want to be first? And they said, no, I'd rather wait. So it's that kind of like disconnect between here in general is where it should go, or what I think, you know, personally, and that ripples all the way down to our staff.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because we will have some additional research that's going to be coming out in the next couple of weeks from Revive on what clinicians think. And to your point, Chris, that's exactly what we're seeing. Doctors and nurses, yes, they feel frontline care workers should get it, but they also, like consumers, kind of they're willing to wait a little bit to see how it goes. One of the really interesting pieces of that too that we're seeing is the trust level in hospitals among clinicians has dropped during COVID. They trust federal and local health officials above hospitals. So when we looked at that consumer slide earlier, it was doctors, it was hospitals, then it was federal health officials. For clinicians, it's federal and local health officials. It's not their employer. It's not the hospital. So that's gonna present some challenges of kind of building up that trust level and that comfortability as a vaccine becomes available. And it, again, reinforces the importance of the need for internal comms.
So what do we, and then this is getting too deep into this, and maybe this is like getting ahead of that potential release, but I can imagine some reasons why that might be. Do we probe why physicians would not trust their own hospitals before public health experts?
Yeah, research still in the field. So this is all preliminary findings. I don't have that information as far as why that might be. I do know that there are concerns specifically about if they're going to be required by their employer to be vaccinated. Most actually don't think they should be, at least based on the current findings. They feel like it should be an individual's choice, but don't necessarily understand why. I mean, I think a lot of it probably is driven back to some stuff that we've seen anecdotally, whether that is, concerns by clinicians about lack of PPE, even going to some systems that have had to furlough staff, the impacts there. They may feel that the health system has not been prioritizing their well-being as much as they should. So that's just a guess.
Yeah, that's what I would. I am not beyond speculating. I don't have any hesitation to speculate. I would guess that there is an element of you don't have our best interests in mind. You have the bottom line interest in mind. And that has come out. Like, that's not just me guessing at that. That's certainly come out in media reports and things we've heard. And so I'm going to trust a third party objective resource who doesn't have skin in the game to decide what's right, rather than the people who, do have skin in the game and are concerned about the financial side. Of course, there's all kinds of ways to look at that. And you got to worry about the financial side to keep your doors open. But that probably is, there's probably an element of that. But let's wait on that, right? Let's wait till the results come back on that. Let's talk next about some of the kind of ways we could categorize, at least starting with consumers, though I think we can extrapolate that to caregivers too, in terms of vaccines, how we can like segment people. What did we learn there?
Yeah, we saw three kind of different groups that kind of presented themselves to this research, and we're calling them adopters, skeptics, and rebels. So you can probably guess what each kind of where each position of those individual groups are. But adopters, those are the ones that obviously feel like they're ready to go ahead and get it. We have skeptics that are like, I'm not really sure, I might wait a little bit. And then you have the rebels, which are probably more entrenched than any of the other two groups. Who feel that that COVID's a hoax, that they don't believe that it's out there, that don't intend to ever get the vaccine. So these are kind of how we broke them up into groups. And as you see on this slide, this kind of shows who's going to get it or who's not going to get it. So the adopters, again, 48% of those folks we categorize as adopters said they'll get the vaccine right away. 33% the skeptics group feels like they're going to wait. And then 19% feels like they don't plan to ever get the vaccine. And that's kind of that rebel group. From an external perspective, we feel like it's probably best use of communications and marketing resources to prioritize that skeptics group from a consumer perspective. However, to some of the reasons that Chris raised earlier, I think there may be a priority for rebels from an internal audience perspective. So the clinicians there. Knowing how vocal they potentially could be in kind of undermining the entire effort, there may need to be a very specific communications plan for those groups. We would certainly recommend doing some pretty significant research into where your internal staff population is to get a better understanding of how significant rebels exist within your health system. And hopefully we'll have some insights as part of the clinician research that we're doing in a couple of weeks. But I think that's a little bit different of how we would probably go about approaching how do we communicate or reach broader general public versus staff. Skeptics group is definitely probably prime audience one for an external perspective, but internally, rebels probably should be prioritized.
Yeah, for sure. A couple of things. One, remember, ask us questions, put them in the Q&A queue if you got any. But related to that, I think it's very similar. I mean, you can almost apply the skeptics label to the folks that have been hesitant to come back in for care because of COVID. And I think it's just worth reminding everybody that it's not enough with this group to lay out logical arguments for why they need to do what they need to do. Because this is not, in most cases, about, for example, a lack of understanding about, like, if we just give them the information, then they'll take the steps we need. It's rarely about that. It's going to go a lot deeper into psychology for people about why they're hesitant to come in for care, or why they don't want a vaccine, or why they'd want to wait for it. So we have to remember that if we should all want as many people as possible to take a safe vaccine as quickly as possible. But it's just not as simple to lay out that case. We have to go deeper and really think about what are the biases people have that are preventing them from taking these steps. Because it's just like anything else in health. I'll just never forget the study that was in Fast Company like 15 years ago, where they talked about people who had heart attacks, and all they had to do was take like one pill to reduce the likelihood of another heart attack. And they can't even manage that. It doesn't get more simple than having to take one pill a day. But again, if that's all you're saying is, hey, just take this pill, and it's not enough. It's not enough to invoke real change. So we'll probably have more content on that. Because it is more nuanced. Just don't forget that.
Yeah, and we don't have it in what we're presenting today, but if folks download the full findings report, you will see some of the things that move folks. And it was interesting to see that it was less focused on kind of what does it mean to protect myself from the vaccine? And it was more focused on how do we get back to doing things that we used to do? Going out, those types of things. That was more it seemed like more of a motivation for individuals from the consumer perspective than it was ultimate protecting them from the vaccine.
Right. Which is, again, brings us back to those segments and why it's so much harder to move the rebel consumer, many of whom may believe, well, we should be doing that anyway. Why do we need a vaccine to do that? We should be doing it anyway. So focusing on those skeptics makes a ton of sense. Not that you should ignore
it. Yeah, I think, but yeah, definitely don't ignore it. I think the skeptics are kind of get the biggest, they have the bigger group than the rebels. So I think that's important. And I think one thing that health systems need to look at is these numbers were national numbers. They are likely to look very different in the communities that you operate and the patients that you serve. I could speculate that it's probably accurate. There may be less rebels if you operate in more of an urban area or on the coasts versus suburban or rural communities that may have more of those rebel groups. I think, evaluating kind of where you are from a consumer perspective, your previous research of kind of getting a little bit more data on your patient population may be helpful there. But even a quick kind of pulse survey might be worthwhile to get a better understanding of how do you prioritize within your individual market.
So we have a question, and I think we can maybe answer it. We can try to answer it anecdotally, though I would invite people to respond to the question in the chat if they have their own responses from their own perspective. The question is, would be interested to hear about a survey sample on whether healthcare facilities are going to mandate vaccination versus make it optional. And I'm assuming here they mean for their own staff, because the asker, is that a word? The questioner. We mandate flu vaccine, but are leaning toward making this one optional for now, at least, because obviously the flu vaccine is not mandatory for consumers, but it is in many health systems mandatory for healthcare workers. So curious, Ryan, if we've heard anything on that distinction specifically, and also interesting that it's even up in the air that the vaccine would be optional, though I understand why, especially initially.
Yeah, the systems that we've talked to about this, the ones that are considering doing it optional, are doing so because they recognize that they may not be able to vaccinate everybody right away. And so they may initially make it optional, but as 6 months, 9 months, 12 months go by, that may change. I think you could also probably estimate that the similar process is probably going to be followed from a consumer perspective. I think pediatrician offices. Those folks may eventually mandate a vaccine once it's available for the general public, or even, airlines or sporting events and those types of things. There may be some sort of requirement to kind of do business as usual in a consumer setting as well. But for clinicians, I think that question's a good one. I think it's similar to what we're seeing with other health systems that are kind of sorting out that question. And they're thinking, yes, at least temporarily, making it optional. However, most of the ones that I've spoken with have been thinking, once the vaccine is readily available to their staff, that may change.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think of where in your life is a vaccine required? And the two that come up with, you didn't mention one, which was schools. And then the other is sporting event, like having kids. I know, like you gotta be up to date on your vaccines, or you're not getting into school, and you also might not participate, on this team. And sometimes that's also applied to private sporting leagues. I don't know if there's, workplaces where that is the case, outside of maybe a health system. But those are the kind of places that I think, to your point, Ryan, and I think also to the person who posed the question, it's one thing to pose a mandatory label on something where it's pretty well known what the risks are. There's always risks, but we know what the risks are, and we've decided that whatever, a smallpox vaccine, I don't know if people even have to take that anymore, a measles vaccine, whatever they have been, you got to take them. This is so new, it's going to take time. It's going to take time to find out whether there is really what the risks are, even with testing, you know, in the process. So, okay. One last thing we wanted to cover, and that is, you know, just kind of overarching again, what are some things that we should be thinking about as a hospital or health system leader to prepare for all this?
Yeah, we talked about a few of them, and it kind of hits a couple of them on what you just said, Chris. One, kind of a tailored research to have a better understanding of kind of where your service area and where your patients and consumers are on this are critical. I think doing the same, whether it's through, you know, small group conversations or even a more formal quantitative instrument with your staff is going to be incredibly important. Just to understand kind of where audiences are, that's going to inform kind of the communications and marketing strategies. A lot of health systems, particularly, and it's kind of coincided with kind of this third surge, for lack of a better way of articulating it. You know, a lot of systems that had kind of when COVID first hit had kind of those operations groups, those task forces that came together that included leadership and operations staff and clinical staff and communications and marketing and those folks. Some systems kind of stood those down a couple months ago. Some are ramping them back up. And I think that this is the perfect time for you as health system leaders to ensure that, or health system communicators, ensure that you all have kind of a seat at the table as those decisions are being made. Because this isn't a communications decision. This is something that has to be driven by operations and leadership to determine how to go. And so then I think the system needs to kind of evaluate as part of those conversations, you know, what evaluation level are we going to take before we start providing the vaccine to our staff and to our patients? Are we simply going to follow CDC and FDA guidelines? Are we going to take an extra step and look at it closer ourselves? Are we going to work together with local community systems and kind of partner with them? So that's kind of a couple of other steps that you might take. And then finally, there's an opportunity for health systems here to kind of position themselves either as local, regional, or even national leaders on the topic, showing why they feel that this vaccine is valid, how they're going to go about doing it. All could fit in kind of a thought leadership bucket. And ultimately, you could do that individually. You could do that as a group with other united voices from health systems or other organizations across your community. So I think there's a couple of things that need to be done there. I think it's never too early to start planning. So starting with research to get a better understanding of where things are, working closely with operations staff to determine how we're going to respond once a vaccine gets ready, and then preparing all the materials that are going to need to be created once a vaccine is available is important. And then starting that sooner rather than later would be very worthwhile since we don't really have a good sense of when this may come.
All right. So we get questions coming in. Let's get to them. First one, and you know this data better than I do, so I'm going to throw this your way, Ryan. Did we find any distinct demographic differences between the three personas?
Yeah, I'll have to dive in a little bit deeper on demographic information. I would guess that the rebels either skewed either really young or really old. I think those are, you know, either 65 plus to that category or, you know, under 30 for those that may be more of the skeptics piece. I think geographically, you're going to see significant differences. You're going to see significant differences based on the impact that people have seen firsthand on the impact of COVID. So markets like New York probably are going to be a little bit different of how serious they're taking it, just given how big of an influx we saw, you know, in March and April and May in that city. So I think you need to look at it a little bit that way. We can segment the data. So if there are specific questions that you're looking to answer from what specific either demographic or geographic differences, feel free to reach out and we can talk more about how we might be able to do that.
Yeah, let us know. If you don't have our way to contact us, you can just use our email for the show, which is nonormal@thinkrevivehealth.com. So if you want us to kind of, if there's something we can look at from a market standpoint, we're willing to try to take a chance to do that. And also, obviously, all Gen Xers are skeptics on everything because I can speak to that. So demographically. So here's another question about skeptics. Do you think skeptics think that the rush to get a vaccine involved cutting corners Would it help to educate them about how the vaccine was developed and the steps taken?
Yes, yes, and yes. Absolutely. I think that's a key part of the skeptics piece. They've seen how political this has become over the last several months. They feel that this is a rushed process. They definitely want or need to see those specifics about how the vaccine was developed. And again, I think that's a key point that health systems can play that role. While certainly public health officials are going to highlight that once we get to that point, health systems should be pointing to that as well. Most people, don't have the familiarity with the process, but given the scrutiny that this vaccine is under, there is far more public understanding of how this process works and how it's working specifically on this vaccine. When you have a flu vaccine every year, you don't probably see a whole lot of people asking questions about, how was this tested on folks? How many people were in the study? Those types of things. They kind of just trust their doctor or trust, that they need to get this before flu season. Here, we're going to have to be far more specific about what went into it. And while we aren't the ones that are actually producing the vaccine, we are the ones that are going to be able to drive its adoption rates. And are ultimately going to hopefully, with strong adoption rates, allow things to return to whatever normal is going to look like coming out of this. The more information and context that we can add, the more information and context we as health system communicators can add about what we're doing to evaluate it is important. And we shouldn't start that process once the vaccine is approved. We need to start that now. We need to be communicating what we're going to be doing now to manage those expectations so that we're able to hit the ground running once that vaccine comes.
And in some ways, this brings us full circle to where we started this show, which is the election, which is up in the air right now, and politics. We had Jarrett Lewis on, researcher, a few weeks ago, and he said something that it's kind of obvious, but when he said it, I was like, "Wow, man, that is really true." And he basically said, and I don't know what he was talking about, related to COVID, I think, that it doesn't matter who wins this election in terms of skepticism on things like vaccines, because if Trump were to prevail, there are a lot of people that believe that the vaccine was rushed to help with reelection. Now that'll be over. There's nothing to gain for Trump if to rush it after that, right? So maybe that diminishes a little bit, but there's also been, people believe that there's been undue influence on the CDC or the FDA politically, and that will make people trust what comes out of there less, right? That's if Trump wins, right? So you got that half of the country who's gonna look at it that way. If it flips, right, it's less likely that people are gonna distrust what's coming out of Biden administration because he tried to rush it. And it's going to be more back to the stuff we've heard about masks, political, like personal liberties. You can't make me take this vaccine. All of those kind of things will then rise to the forefront. And those may be there anyway, but they're less likely. That's going to be less likely if Trump were to come out and say, "Hey, we got the vaccine. Everybody should take it." You're going to hear less of that from the people that support him. So, and I'm not trying to stereotype. I mean, this is all just the way it is, for good or for bad. So it doesn't matter who wins. It doesn't matter who wins. It's going to impact the messaging, but either way, it's going to be a challenge in terms of skepticism. That political part of it will be a challenge. It's just in what way?
Right.
All right.
I mean, it very, very likely we could flip where now, say Vice President Biden wins, say that happens. Trump supporters may be less likely to accept a vaccine if that comes 2, 3, 4 months down the line. They just may not trust it. And now those that were originally distrusting of the current process may be more receptive to it. So unfortunately, this should not be a political issue as far as a vaccine. Unfortunately, it has become one, whether that's masks or vaccines or others. But that's the communications environment that we live in right now, and we need to adapt accordingly.
Definitely. All right. So thank you for the questions, everybody. We always appreciate those. Thank you, Ryan, for joining once again.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure. We'll definitely have you back again at some point. Chase, sir?
Absolutely. Enjoyed the conversation.
If you would like us to cover something that we haven't been covering, let us know. Post it in the chat channel or email us at nonormal@thinkrevivehealth.com. In fact, give us your opinion on next week. We were just debating it. We're going to have a guest host, Jeff Speer, and we're debating whether the topic should be the impact of the political outcome of this election on health systems. So even if we don't know by then, which is possible, we can have a discussion about what's going to happen if it ends up being Biden or Trump and overall on the health system space. Or we could have a discussion about, here we go again, third wave. Let's dive deeper in the implications beyond vaccine, but just on what happens if we have to shut down surgeries again. What happens if you're running out of PPE? I mean, all the things we talked about back in the beginning are unfortunately front and center again and likely deserve that conversation. So if you have an opinion, let us know. Let us know by Monday, either way, right now or in the email I shared. But until then, good luck out there in the no normal, whether that's the COVID no normal or this election no normal, or it's crazy times. Good luck, and thanks for joining us today.